of an introduction is to give you information or background about somebody that you're about to meet and hear. If that's the purpose of an introduction, then who am I to possibly introduce Rabbi Chanoch Teller, whose books you've read and whose shiurim you've all had the schools probably to listen to at some point, or many of you many times, whose movie maybe you've seen, hopefully. So an introduction would be out of place and inappropriate. I'm standing up here right now to express appreciation. This is an appreciation, not an introduction. To express a karsa tova, Rabbi Chanoch Teller, for sharing us the treat of his presence here in Camp Ask tonight. It's a great effort to be here. It takes time to drive up. The weather's not good, but we appreciate it very, very much. So thank you very much for being here.
If I don't need it, I can get away. Go.
If I'm too loud, tell me.
Okay, thank you, Rami. Thank you very much. And Bishus, Rabbi Judah in Abstensia. Where's Yiddel? Where's Rabbi Willie? Oh, bummer. Okay, but Baruch Hashem, you're here. I had this opening line I wanted to say and I forgot it already. Sorry about that. Okay, I kept going back and forth in my mind what to talk about. And then just time-wise, so as not to go so long, we'll do a subject. I was looking at how many of you I've taught, so I don't repeat myself. Anybody from my hotel? We can be democratic about this, how about that? Democratic was, I was going to speak either about Rav Nosson Zvi Finkel, that's one thought I had, or about character. You look very parv. Go for it. Okay. Maybe we'll do both. Maybe we'll do both. Just. Shmuel B'Kalam. Every talk I ever went to on parenting, and there aren't many of them, they always stress how important it is to love your children. Which personally I think is rather dumb. But no one stresses the equally obvious that children that are well behaved, courteous, not nuisance, it's easier to love them. Now, I'm not here to talk about parenting, but I'm talking about certain acts of character. And I'm not even trying to speak to the choir, because obviously if you have a job like this, where it's all volunteer, you are a person of character, endowed with a good heart and a good experience. And yet, I'm talking about things which I think we can all inculcate. These are things which need always a little brushing up, and I'll try and give some practical examples. Okay, so minimalistically, it means more than just saying please and thank you. It means not putting a soiled tissue, leaving it on the bench or on a chair, or I can say positively, a boy or a girl who puts a soiled tissue in their pocket tells you a little bit how they were raised and how they conduct themselves. It means offering your seat on a bus or a train or public transportation to one who's older or weaker. I once offered my seat to a woman on a bus that I thought was pregnant. And when she told me she wasn't, I was so embarrassed, I said, I'm getting off anyways. And I ended up having to pay double car fare. It means, by the way, speaking about offering transportation, I was just really on the road a long time today. An interesting thing is that, I don't know why this is, but driving brings out the worst character in people. And if someone cuts you on the highway, my students told me that if someone cuts you on the highway, you'll cut 9 other people to cut them back. That's intelligent at 90 miles an hour. But they're not your mortal enemy. And you can even then unspool so many expletives in front of children. And I once looked up the statistics of road rage in America. And I don't remember that, but I do remember every year over 100,000 people are maimed for life, consequential to road rage. So that person may not be a Lamed Vav Tzadik, but they're not your enemy. And even though they may delay you by a nanosecond, not to take such drastic measures. I'm trying to think as far as cars. Cars means offering a seat, it means being a polite driver. It would also mean not double parking or triple parking, or it means not cutting a line, even if you think your time is more important than someone else's, that would also apply to cutting the ramp onto the Brooklyn Bridge. It would mean, this example is not so good for Park Slope, but in Manhattan, where taxis are at a premium, to offer a taxi also to the one who's older or weaker. And I'm in the latter category, because I'm always schlepping my books, which are heavy, and I hail a taxi, and when you hail a taxi, when you hail a cab, you can't stop right there, it has to weave to the side of the road. And so once hail, you know, every story has two versions, except for this one. So I hailed the cab, and it was mamash my cab. So he pulls over the side, and just, I hoisted up the box of books, I'm about to run over, and then a girl goes into the cab and said, "Hey, that's my taxi." And she said, "That's life." That's what I'm trying to explain to you, it's not appropriate. Even though we live in a me-first society, that's inappropriate. Okay. Now, the way I've structured what I'm going to say to you is difficult and less difficult things. We're up to a difficult one. If I give all the hard ones in a row, it'll be hard to stay with me. We're up to a hard one. Now, I may look to you like an old fuddy-duddy, even though I'm just 27, but I was not born with a cell phone surgically attached to my ear. And there are times that it's inappropriate to use a cell phone. I've been at funerals where a cell phone goes off. Now, I'm aware of the fact sometimes you forget to turn off your phone. You ever notice? At a funeral, it's always the jumpiest niggin. It's always the Munsters or the Addams Family tune that goes off. So I was discussing this at the Shabbos table with my kids. I said, you know, I was at a funeral, phone went off, and my kids said it was probably a doctor. So I said, I don't think that 15-year-old girl is a doctor. And I'm aware of the fact you forget to turn off your phone. I was at a funeral not all that long ago, relatively recently. A young woman was the nifteris, and the fellow next to me, his phone was going off again and again. It wasn't on silent. And he was talking about what he wants to have for the next meal. And after 5 different phone calls, my eye daggers finally penetrated. So he moved over a little bit. He didn't turn off his phone. And I said to the guy next to me, the guy next to me said to me, "I don't get you that you're getting so bent out of shape over this." But I am. Where's the decency? If at a funeral, you can't turn off your phone. So I'm right off the boat. I landed this morning and I went into a store. When I was buying gas coming up here. So the card didn't work, so I went inside the gas station, and as I went up to pay for my phone number, so I said, "Do you mind if I take the call?" Maybe it's because I was speaking in English, but she didn't, I could, till I explained, I was trying to ask permission for it, but it was a wasted effort. Anyways, I'm trying to encourage her. There's a decorum that has to be established regarding phone, and we're losing it. I find it inappropriate. I said I wasn't going to speak about parenting, but parents pick up children at school talking on the phone. That's not what I think is the right message to a child. Okay, next. All right, sorry, but we're on another hard one. Everyone knows, everyone knows. If I put my hand in your pocket, I'm a thief. But there's much less awareness that if I make you wait for me, that's also stealing. If you make a whole class wait for you, a whole bunk wait for you, a whole camp wait for you, that's a serious, heinous crime. Money can always return. Time is irreplaceable. Chazon Ish was once putting together a minyan. It was a minyan mitzumtzam. It was a bare-bones minyan. I mean, it was just 10 men. And one of the men was hemming and hawing. He said, "Listen here, what's the problem?" He said, "I'm happy to join your minyan, but if I go to your minyan, I'll be late for my appointment." Said the Chazon Ish, "Go to the appointment." Then he said, "You can't daven on stolen time." More contemporaneously, my Rebbe's called Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. If someone would give him a ride, he'd be extraordinarily grateful, because there's tremendous savings of time. And once, someone offered, now this will sound strange to you, but 35 years ago in Israel, it was unusual for a religious person to drive. 45 years ago, it was almost unheard of for a religious person to own a car. Almost unheard of. And the person who told me the story, a man who's no longer living, was the first car in Shari Chesed Shlomo Zalman's neighborhood. Shlomo Zalman had to be in Santa Kedushin out of town, and this fellow offered to give him a ride. I said, what time should I pick up the reshiva? He said, well, the wedding's called for 6. Pick me up at 4:30. Wedding was in Petah Tikva. Now, my own experience from Zalman, Baruch Chaim Tovim, his Talmud, his closest Talmud, the Vicar Neventhal, any time you make up with them for a ride, at that time exactly, and never a second later, they're outside with a sefer waiting for you. Never, ever would you have to wait for them. And he's waiting and waiting and waiting. Yeah. 4:30, 4:40, 5 o'clock, 5:10. 5:25, the driver's moseying along. Said, where were you? He said, I couldn't bear to fill it. If I would have come on time, I would have brought the reshiva to the wedding as the busboys were setting up the table. As the photographer was taking his equipment out of the case, he said, Shlom Zalman, don't worry about me. I plan to do my time. But we make up a time, we must leave the time. The poor chassid, there's so much on his mind. He has to worry about, is the Masada Kedushin coming? Is he coming on time? We make up a time, you have to keep the time. So people tell me, I'm not a Yeki. I'm also not a Yeki. But I don't want to make other people wait for me. And I want other people to have to wait. I don't want to wait for other people, and I want people to have to wait for me. So people think, but by nature, I'm just not a prompt person. The person in my family, I always say that they're going to write on her matzeva, here lies the late. Or people say, I'm allergic to mourning. Or well, every excuse in the world. So I'm here to tell you, when it comes to good character, or we can make punch out of one function of this, you don't have to wait for Rosh Hashanah, and you don't have to wait for Elul to repair. I'm going to give you 4 examples. Example number 1 is, this I hear from Rabbi Yisachar Friend. When we were kids, again I'm 27, but when we were kids, everybody spoke Lashon Hara. Nowadays, there's a much greater awareness to avoid Lashon Hara. Be careful what you say. I mean, you might say, this may be Lashon Hara, but you don't just come out and say it. The world has changed. When we were kids, if you didn't see a picture of a pig on a candy bar, you ate it. You said, doesn't go, I'm going. Nowadays, you don't put something in your mouth without checking the ingredients. You look for a hechsher. My host in Brooklyn, when I come to America, his name is Pashkes. Very sweet man, Mr. Pashkes. And he manufactures candy. And if you look at the wrapper of Pashkes candy bar, there are more hechsherim than there are ingredients, with no connection. Okim Leib Adrabim Leib, Pagin Dibura, Shatnes, Eir Mufulish. It wasn't that way. It used to be, if it didn't see a pig, you just ate it. The world has changed. I distinctly remember a second Seder in Yeshiva. There was a petrochemical layer, yay thick, malodorous, odorific, farstunken, redolent. Nowadays, if you smoke, you're a pariah. Outside in the cold or in the heat. You watch a movie from the 70s on your neighbor's TV. Everybody's smoking. The world has changed. Now you're a pariah if you smoke. And lastly, Oskar Schindler was a dishonest businessman, a womanizer, and he saved over almost 1,200 Jews during the Holocaust. Had it not been for the latter, if he'd be remembered, and that's a major if, he'd be remembered as a creep. And now Leib Schindler is synonymous with heroism, bravery, courage, self-sacrifice, synonymous. Like Vaseline means petroleum jelly, and Kleenex means tissues, and Q-tips means cotton swabs, and Band-Aids means Plasto. Schindler means self-sacrifice. He changed his name. And we can too. We're not committed. We can all change. We can all rectify, can all repair, improve ourselves. As I like to quote, we can all be honorable mention. Okay, we're going to skip a little bit. Not that you would know. What's a good guest? What's a bad guest? So the Gemara says, Mer brachos manches. A good guest says, look how much they traveled for me. Look how much they went out of their way for me. And a bad guest says, and I'm translating verbatim, he only gave me one slice of bread. And he only gave me one piece of meat, and he only gave me one cup of wine. And they didn't do it for me. The only one who impressed their wife and children. We don't want to go through life as bad guests. And how do we get this approach? So I want to propose, it's a friend of mine who suggested this. You go to Simcha at someone's house, be it a Shavuot Brachos, Chaim, and to make this even more, 2 years ago in my family, we were blessed with a Rosh Hashanah, which I wish upon everyone. And now I don't know where I've been the first 27 years of my life, but I mean, I'm embarrassed to tell you, I always thought, when you go to Shavuot Brachos, that family, their house is arranged like a birthday party, table and chairs. And then all of a sudden, I was going, Shavuot, I start realizing, every house in Western civilization has a couch. And now if I go to a simcha, the first thing I do is I look for the couch. If it's not there, I look for it. And I find it out in the peset, or standing on its ear in the hallway, it shows me how much they troubled on my behalf. So what happens? You go to a simcha, then afterwards, as you're driving home, is the postmortem. Salads, atrocious. Home decorating, appalling. Kids, very misbehaved. Shalom bias, So my suggestion is, if you don't have something good to say, then... No, we tried that already. My new suggestion is, if you don't have something good to say, wait 24 hours. You can't say it then either, but it'll cool off. But at least 24 hours, don't be an ingrate from the rooftops. People troubled for you, show the decency, at least, to be appreciative and not bellyache. At least that much. It's not my place to say this. I think that's a speaker device for getting people's attention, but it isn't my place. But through actions that are overt or covert, or nuance and innuendo, we have a tendency, I think it's human nature, I know it's my nature, and I'm not happy about this at all, I'm working on myself. But I think most people have a tendency, if you know someone is very affluent and influential and powerful, we have a tendency to be very warm and ebullient and affable towards that person. And someone else is on the lower social strata, we have a tendency to be much cooler. In other words, you hear about someone who's a partner in a law firm with 500 lawyers, wait. That's very impressive. And someone else pumps gas in a filling station, that's not impressive. And then you learn, And then you learn that this fancy-delancy lawyer is a distant father, an abusive husband, and your image tanks. And a fellow who pumps gas, you learn, is a lovable, loving person. His children adore him. Your image goes up. But chaval, that's our initial impression. So, I heard a story. A friend of mine told me a story. This is a true story, meaning it's not an email that went around. It really happened. My friend Yessel Chapter lives in Borough Park, and he was having his apartment painted by a black painter. So they're taking all the paintings off the wall. I went around and said, leave them on the wall. Take all the paintings off the wall, and one of the paintings was an enlargement of the Baba Varebi. And the black painter asked my friend Yossel, is this your rabbi? He said, no. And then the painter said, why isn't he your rabbi? He's not my rabbi, let's get on the job. But why, he's not my rabbi. He said, but why isn't he? He's not my rabbi, he's a big rabbi. But why is he? He's not my rabbi. Can we get on with the job? But why isn't he? He's not my rabbi. Look, there's other rabbis. Beard, he looks very rabbinic. But why isn't he here? He's not my rabbi. Then the black painter said, he's my rabbi. What? He pulls out his wallet and rips out a photograph of the Baba Rebbe. He said, what the? I'll tell you. He said, one morning I was painting his house. And then when I came home, he said to me, the first thing he said, did you have breakfast? I said, no. He said, sit down. He waited upon me. And then he said, I want to tell you something. Now you just was going to say, I heard this shmooze a million times. He's going to tell me I'm paying you good money. I want the perfect job. And the Rebbe said, we once had the world of perfection. Everything was the way it was supposed to be, but because of our sins, the temple was destroyed. So I can't ask you to do a perfect job, but I'd like you to try your hardest. And you know how it is. People recommend, he gave me hundreds of his chassidim. No one ever offered me breakfast, but they all said, I'm paying you good money, I want a perfect job. And I say to them, you want a perfect job. There's no temple. How do you want a perfect job? Rosh Hashanah said, you can speak Musa for half an hour, And it's all worthwhile, even if just one person listens, even if that one person is the speaker. So we officially have 6 more minutes, so to be fair, I'm going to speak a little about Ravnasansi, if I may. The cogent points is that Ravnasansi Finkel, the great Rishiva, passed away. We're nearing now, almost nearing 3 years. The all-American Yankee Doodle. Co-ed school, co-ed camp. He arrived in Yeshiva sporting the Chicago Cubs baseball camp. And he arrived to his great uncle. That's the catch in the story. I mean, his last name was Finkel. In the Mir Yeshiva, Finkel is the big name. When I arrived in the Mir, the whole Mizrachvat was Rav Benish Finkel, Rav Moshe Finkel, Rav Moshe Finkel. The word for corner in Yiddish is Winkel, the Finkel and the Winkel. I'll tell you a story, then I'll tell you who made up the story. But anyway, the person called the Mir and said, may I speak to Rabbi Finkel? I'm sorry, but Rabbi Finkel's giving shir now. I speak to Rabbi Finkel. Rabbi Finkel's outside talking to 2 students. I speak to Rabbi Finkel. Rabbi Finkel called in sick today. I speak to Rabbi Finkel. Rabbi Finkel went overseas collecting money. I speak to Rabbi Finkel. Speaking. Okay, I made up the story. But so he was coming back to the family, albeit this was an American branch, rather distant. And when he arrived, his great uncle took him under his wing, informed his parents that his vacation of touring the country is over now, and he'll spend the summer learning yeshiva. But it was a non-starter for his parents. The boys were going to say, yeshivas went back to Chicago, finished high school, and then, we'll say this delicately, when his parents were away on vacation, his uncle accidentally, on purpose, sent him a one-way ticket to Israel. He arrived in Israel, and it's not like today, you get on a plane in Kennedy, and 10 hours later you're in Israel. It was a long journey, propeller plane, leg after leg after leg. When he arrived in Eretz Israel, he was tamatzed, very tired. He just was dreaming about dreaming. Wanted to get into bed. And his root problem of housing and boarding, that was all settled by staying in his great uncle's house, Leidel Finkel, the Roshiva. And he said to this Yankee Doodle American, his great nephew, tell me over a Chiddush. He said, you know, maybe I'll sleep a little bit, I'll look open the Gemara. He said, no, tell me a Chiddush. And his uncle was not cutting any slack. He said, okay, go up to Beis Medrash, think of Akasha. Otherwise, you don't go to sleep. And he went up to Beis Medrash, came down 40 minutes later, said over Akasha and Taisus. Uncle gave him a kiss in the head and put him to bed. Because Finkel is the name of Slobodka. And Slobodka means the godless ha'adam, the greatness of man. You're so sublime, so lofty, how could you sin? To achieve levels. In the Slobodka Yeshiva, there was a kolel, a yeshiva of 500 boys. And in that yeshiva, a kolel of 14. It was called the Yad Chazaka. Get it? Yad, 14. We left Mitzrayim Yad Chazaka, and the Rambam's classic volumes of the Yad, and that kolel was 14. And they were the likes of Rav Aaron Cutler, Yaakov Kamenetsky, Yaakov Ruderman, Yaakov Leibowitz, Yaakov Moshe Lessen, Pesach Prushkin, Elie Henkin, from Grzovsky, Rav Elie Henkin, Rav Pesach Prushkin, if I didn't say that already. Bummer. Rav Eliezer Yehuda Finkel, Reuven Katz, okay, 12. I'll get down. Now, to better identify, Rav Aaron Cutler Lakewood, Yaakov Kamenetsky, Tervidas Munzi, Yaakov Ruderman, Michel Goldtour, he's the Kuttner, 13. Chaim Berlin. David Leibowitz, 14. Chafetz Chaim, Queens, etc., etc., etc. Reuven Katz, Petach. Reuven Katz, Petach Tikva, Yichel Yaakov Weinberg, Switzerland. This is the who's who of the next generation. How did he achieve this? Now you might say, these men were so great, no matter where they would go, they would have been outstanding. I'm sure. But I just think it's too great a coincidence they're all in the same place. I'm aware of the fact that some people don't like the word coincidence. I personally think it's a very firm word, because what's the root of coincidence? Coincide. And there you have it. Coincide. God's right in there. But the author was able to take a person and take a little Arila and output Rav Aaron Cutler. The Yankee output of Yaakov Kamenetsky. How did he do it? And this is the segue to my farewell to you in the summer. He did it because all educational institutions like to pride themselves we give individual attention and maximize potential. We got a person to all that which they could do. You have displayed patience this summer that you may not have been aware you had. Slobodka taught all that you can do. I thought during high school, and to be honest, I didn't think about all that much in high school, but I thought that if I had midterms all year long, I'd be a genius. I'd also probably crack up. The Alter put his students into finals every day of the year, and he was the calmest man that ever walked this earth. But if you're not doing all that you can do, that's failure. And you have to be tomorrow not where you were today. And the next day, even higher. You're growing. The author said he only taught one lesson. He taught thousands of lessons, but the lesson was Godless Adam, the greatness of man. It means that you have a certain conduct, and anything lower than that is inappropriate. I'll give you, it's a crass example, but maybe you can relate to it. If you imagine Rabbi Yehuda Willick licking an ice cream cone, and the bowl of ice cream falls on the floor, and he goes, you can never imagine that. It's just, it's too inappropriate. We have to have an image of ourselves, that we want to improve it and make it better, and not do something which is inappropriate for someone who can achieve so much. And to conclude, Rav Nosson Tzvi was plagued with Parkinson's disease, severely plagued by it. And he wasn't a well man, but he did things that people with that were robust didn't have the energy to do. Among them, raising money. It is not easy to raise money. His budget for the year is $24 million a year. So according to my estimate, he raised $500 million in his 10-year Rosh Yeshiva. And when he came to America to raise money, people saw this sick man who was without chalil, making, you know, unable to control his limbs. Parkinson's is a breakdown of the central nervous system. And his legs would fall out, and arms would twitch, and speech was there was an impediment to his speech. And when he'd give a shiur, he'd hold on to his hat, it shouldn't fall off, and hold on to the shender, he shouldn't fall over. And that itself was a shiur. Once he went to a kolo by Fagan, and he opened his mouth, nothing came out. And he tried, and he tried, and the audience didn't know which way to look. But it was probably the best shiur they've heard in their lives. And after 15 minutes, he requested a piece of paper. With his querulous hand, he wrote, "Nisiti slicha. I tried. Forgive me." And that's a lesson, an incredible lesson. With all disabilities, you can make the largest yeshiva in the history of history and finance it and oversee it. I said I was going to end already. It's very been done several times, but...
We don't care.
That's very nice of you. Thank you. But I just spoke about, you know, caring about people's time. The last thing I'm going to tell you is that there was a fellow learner here. I know this fellow well because we met in high school and we maintained our friendship. And after learning here for a couple of years, he went back to America. He's married, went back to America, 5 kids, developed a terrible disease which took his life. The shiva felt terrible for him, and he wrote to his widow that, "I want to be involved with your family." And to the boys, it was 4 girls, 1 boy. He would write them letters of learning all the time. And they would write him back, he would write them. And the girl felt somewhat shafted in this relationship. The boys were getting attention, and she was left out. And then when the boys came to learn in Israel, and they didn't learn the Mir Yeshiva, they would dine at the Rosh Yeshiva's table. That was unusual. As kind as the Finkels are, when you have a yeshiva of 7,000 Talmidim, you can't expect all the boys. The boys don't eat in the yeshiva's house. But these boys are special characters. They ate there all the time. And once again, the girl felt she was left out of this relationship. One day, a letter arrived in the house, postmarked Israel, and the mother handed the letter to her daughter. And what it was a large heart that was colored in red, and signed Nosson Tzvi Finkel. And the girl said from the time her father died, she never felt more loved. I was thinking to myself, as if she was coloring this heart, what's going on? The bank is calling up demanding payment. The debtors are banging down the doors. And Talmidim are coming over to learn with him. And he's maintaining chavrusas. All this is going on, and he's covering the heart with all of his heart. But that's how he did everything. And maybe, just maybe, that's our connection to everything. You all know you did something very important this summer. And this is such an exhilarating moment to hold on to it, to keep it. Even if something as mundane as just simple, der cheretz, meshlechkeit, to be an honorable mensch. And to say to ourselves that we know what we can be, and we don't want to be any less. So thank you, thank you. If anybody's interested, I bought my two latest books. I think you'll find them enriching. I know I will. Thank you. Oh, one more thing. I produced, we produced a very entertaining video about, very interesting, but if you put your names down, I'll send it to you.
Scott.